Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 28, 2019. South Sudan's Catholic bishops express concern over the implementation of the peace deal.
The current peace infrastructure mediated by IGAD is fatally flawed, and we urge all stakeholders and friends of South Sudan to collaborate to seek a new model, a change.
And some residents in Yei River State say people are dying due to lack of health care.
Actually, Mukaya County, it has people, but some of them, they just come from the bush, and then some of them, they're just out without medicine. Really, it is, we are in need.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese Catholic bishops meeting in Juba say the revitalized peace deal does not address the root cause of the conflict and should be renegotiated. The bishops released a pastoral message following a three-day meeting in the capital. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The bishops say the revitalized agreement signed last year simply extends the power-sharing model, which encourages the parties to haggle over positions and percentages rather than working for the good of the country. Paulino Lukudularo, Archbishop of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, says while the level of open conflict has been reduced due to the signing of the peace deal, the ceasefire continues to be violated in parts of the country, especially Yei River State, where various rebel groups have been fighting with the government forces for weeks. Archbishop Lukudu says the Catholic bishops believe the peace deal in its current form will not endure.
We fear that the current peace infrastructure mediated by IGAD is fatally flawed, and we urge all stakeholders and friends of South Sudan to collaborate to seek a new model, a change of narrative for the true peace, which goes beyond the arches.
Besides the faithful, the bishops say their message goes out to all South Sudanese and the international community. With only 2 months remaining in the pre-transitional period, Lukudu says the Roman Catholic bishops remain deeply concerned about the pace at which the parties are implementing the agreement, but also how the deal fails to address the atrocities committed and the impunity that continues for the perpetrators of those crimes.
The value of human life and dignity is forgotten as human rights abuses with impunity, including murder, rape, widespread sexual violence, looting, and occupation of civilian land and property.
The bishops are calling on the parties to release all prisoners of war and political detainees. Lukudu says the bishops also want the parties to take immediate practical steps to end the fighting in Yei River State.
The president of South Sudan should engage all stakeholders and parties. The value of traditional leaders and chiefs must be recognized and factored in. The existing national dialogue can be instrumental to the process, but it should be genuine and inclusive. Traditional conflict resolution mechanisms and intertribal dialogue practices should be used.
The bishops also say South Sudan's leaders must also urgently address the unresolved issues of the number of states and their boundaries. According to Lukudu, the bishops stand ready to mediate between parties that are not part of the peace agreement. Asked why the bishops feel the agreement does not adequately address the country's problems, Santo Loku, the auxiliary bishop of Juba, says the deal was drafted by Sudan and Uganda, and the warring parties were forced to sign it, which he says is the reason why it's not holding.
The issue of good governance and practically listening to the constituencies for better agreement is a big issue. That's why we mentioned in our letter that the issue of 32 states should be addressed immediately as one of the root causes of the ongoing conflicts.
Loku says the deal also fails to address rampant corruption or institutional reforms. Reacting to the bishop's concerns, Information Minister Michael Makwe had this to say.
Yes, I'm sorry and disappointed to hear such a comment from a renowned religious sect. I'm saying this because it is to our strongest belief that the agreement addresses all the concerns of the people of South Sudan. It is fighting corruption. It is for reform. It is for democratic transfer of power. It is for all the principles for which everybody has been yearning here in South Sudan.
A new transitional government is to be established in May, but the bishops say many issues that we are supposed to be addressed, such as integration of the various armed forces and ensuring free movement of civilians and aid workers, has not happened. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Civilians trapped by a conflict in remote parts of Yei River State say they have not had access to health care or medicine for the past 3 years. Since 2016, the area has been a battleground for SPLA-IO, National Salvation Front rebels, other rebel groups and government forces. Daniel Martin Friday traveled to Mokaya County recently and has this report for VOA from Yei.
A group of displaced women sing a local peace song as they arrive in Mokaya County headquarters after surviving in the bush for more than 3 years. Faustino Lugala, a resident of Kilip Village, says since fighting flood again in 2016, the area became a no-go zone for aid workers. Speaking in his native Pojulu dialect, Lugala says many villagers who feel sick relied on herbs made from local tree leaves and roots to treat common diseases like malaria, diarrhea, and pneumonia.
I move with local traditional herbs in my pocket as first aid to help me treat malaria, with the ray of hope that peace is coming. We want the angels to come and help us and save more lives. 26 people have died in the villages because there were no medical drugs.
Charity Nyoka, a resident of Kinda Village, says many civilians trapped by fighting in the villages were too afraid to seek medical care at Ye Civil Hospital, believing they could be killed along the way by either government or rebel forces. Speaking in her native Pojulu dialect, Nyoka called on the government and NGOs operating in Ye River State to provide medicine and send health workers to the county.
We don't have drugs here. We rely on traditional herbs for medication. Secondly, once a pregnant mother is sick or at a high level stage, many end up dying on the way to the hospital or within the village itself. We want the government to help us with the medicines in the villages.
Martin James Ramadala, the head chief in Mokaya County, says health facilities are not functioning. Speaking in Arabic, he says many health workers fled the area to Ye Town or to refugee camps in neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2016.
The total number of residents in Mokaya County stands at more than 7,000 individuals living in deep villages. People, more especially children and pregnant women, are suffering from various diseases because there were no medicines. My message to the government and NGOs is that many people are returning, but there is too much suffering.
Mokaya County Commissioner Simon Fester confirms that many IDPs are returning to the county without medical assistance.
The NGOs and even the government and the state government really to help me because really, actually, Mokaya County, it has people, but some of them, they just come from the bush, and then some of them, they're just out without medicine. Really, we are in need.
Justice Lugala is the executive director for South Sudan Health Association, a national NGO providing health services in Greater Lanya County. Lugala says his organization could not deliver medical aid to the area due to insecurity.
In fact, there were drugs lying in the store, but there was no way we could take the drugs to those areas, and the whole thing became complicated during the recent clashes between the government and the rebel forces in the area. We were not certain about the security situation, and that is why we want the government to go on the ground and assure us that the security situation is good.
Dr. James Wani, Director General for Health and Sanitation in Yei River State's Health Ministry, believes the situation in Mokaya County is relatively calm.
Most of the health workers are not on the ground, but we had an assessment. We had a team who went to Mokaya. Now we call upon all our implementing partners and the partners who are working in the health sector to support us in terms of delivery of drugs to the people there.
Wani says the Yei River officials are working to extend health services to remote parts of Mokaya County. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
Participants at the ongoing Bahr al-Ghazal National Dialogue Regional Conference in Wau say they want South Sudan leaders to adopt a federal system of governance to improve service delivery and accountability. They say the decentralized system has failed to provide services or protect citizens. As Michael Atit reports from Wau, there are also calls for the president and state governors to serve a maximum of 2 5-year terms. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Wau.
More than 300 people drawn from 11 states in the greater Bahr al-Ghazal region and the disputed Abyei area are taking part in the 5-day national conference this week in Wau. Aside from demanding that service delivery be improved, participants are also describing how they want South Sudan to be governed, how the economy should be run, and how the security sector should be organized. Participant Kuala Thien Mewien, who represents the former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state, says accountability is key to developing the country.
When there is accountability from the grassroots up to the national level, then there will be no corruption. There will be no mismanagement of resources. There will be control. Everybody must be controlled. And then there must be respect of constitution. The constitution must be respected. And the rule of law must be applied.
Athian says it is only through a federal system of governance with the limited terms of office of elected officials can there truly be accountability. Many participants also said they want the federal government to own and manage land in consultation with the communities. They argue that South Sudan has many land disputes along its border with Kenya, Sudan, and Uganda, and individual communities do not have the authority to resolve such disputes. Speaking in Arabic, Nyarwach Palgach, who represents Abyei at the conference, argues so long as the land belongs to the community, the country as a whole will continue to lose land because communities do not have the power to challenge foreign countries.
We have Hufra Nihas in Raja. This is our land, but has been taken away by Sudan. If the government was in control of this, it would have not been taken away. We also have the issue of Abyei with Masiria along Sudan's border. So we better allow our government to own the land and defend it.
Mary Amer Nibol, a delegate from Eastern Lake State, says federalism is good because it will allow counties to develop equitably.
We want our county to be devolved, and we want our county to be having everything like education and health, and we want our country to be having well organized, like when we have federalism, our road will be there clearly, and the hospital will be there, and development will be there.
Many participants agreed with the Kiir administration that the government should disarm civilians to promote social cohesion. Abraham Awolich, acting executive director of SIRD Institute and a member of the National Dialogue Secretariat, says the violent citizens' experience during the conflict convinced them that the current system of governance does not serve the needs of the people.
The citizens of South Sudan believe that it is governance that is not working, that is why we're in crisis. And therefore, they are spending a lot of time on trying to fix governance, with the belief that if governance is fixed and we have a system of government that is respected, then you can handle all other matters, including the provision of services. But if you don't have a good governance, and people don't respect the will of citizens through elections, then the crisis will not end.
Awolich says it is encouraging to see the level of active participation and the number of suggestions the delegate offered to improve the country's governance. Participants also broke into smaller groups this morning to discuss economic issues. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. Embassy officials in Sudan discuss investments. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in which way are you most like your parents?
In my physical appearance, I'm most like my dad. I do not really look like my mom. She talks a lot, but I also don't like talking.
I look very much like my dad, and I speak like him too. But as for my mother, I don't resemble her at all, but I love her anyway.
I'm like my dad when it comes to giving orders, like leading. And then when it comes to my mom, I'm like her when it comes to cooking, because she has good cooking skills.
Yeah, like my character. People say I'm like my parents when it comes to character. Like the way I behave, the way I socialize, it's just like the way my parents do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In February, Sudanese officials took part in two separate events to help spur investment in Sudan. The Chargé d'Affaires in the U.S. Embassy in Sudan held a meeting on February 7th with Baker Hedges, an oil field services company owned by General Electric, about investment opportunities in Sudan's energy, mining, infrastructure sectors. That's according to a Facebook post from Sudan Embassy account. Suleiman Baldo, senior advisor at the Enough Project, says by holding such meetings, the U.S. is sending a message that it is business as usual in Sudan, while the anti-Bashir demonstrations enter their 10th week in the country.
This is a kind of a routine meeting that the U.S. Embassy would hold with the visiting U.S. executives from corporations or the country directors to guide them on routine opportunities. But Sudan is not a routine country. Sudan is going through a people's revolution, and the regime of President Omar al-Bashir has used really excessive power of using live ammunition to try and quell a peaceful protest for democratic change. And we are saying that while it is good to encourage business normalization of relations at that level, this is not the right time to do so, because of the extreme conditions that are prevailing in the country under this popular protest for democratic change in the country after 30 years of the rule of President Omar al-Bashir.
And the second meeting was in Addis Ababa in mid-February. The Sudanese foreign minister was invited to participate in the U.S.-Africa Forum on Trade and Investment. And I understand that there is also some concern on the part of the Enough Project about this meeting. Could you tell us why?
We are concerned that the U.S. administration is continuing to deal with Sudan, you know, as if nothing is happening in the country. Sudan on Friday, this last Friday, is under martial law. You know, President Omar al-Bashir declared a state of emergency, dissolved the government, fired his first vice president, replaced his vice president with someone who is sanctioned by the U.S. For the role he played in Darfur, you know, under the administration of President Bush. Three individuals were sanctioned for crimes that were committed in Darfur, including war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. And two of these three individuals are now serving, one as Ferris Vice President and Minister of Defense, General Ibnov, and the second one as advisor to the President, Ahmad Haroon, who is also an indictee of the ICC. So, you know, these are really extreme conditions, and the U.S. shouldn't be dealing with Sudan, you know, as business as usual.
Allow me to play devil's advocate here, because someone might argue that discussions on investment opportunities in Sudan are a good thing. And in fact, part of the reason that protesters took to the streets is because of the economic situation. What would you say to someone who said that to you?
Well, you look at the State Department's own annual reports in regard to the question of the business an investment environment in, you know, in Sudan. And this cite World Bank rating of Sudan for ease of doing business as very low. Sudan is ranked among, you know, the worst countries in the world for ease of business, transparency, and anti-corruption efforts. Why? Because in Sudan, you have a system of institutional corruption, massive corruption at the level of you know, the highest levels of authority, in the form of ministers and the family of the president, for example, those in the inner circle of power owning businesses and, you know, and winning contracts because of their links to power. You have a large number of entire sectors of the economy owned by companies that are, you know, under the national army, the national police, or the national intelligence and security services. So corruption, lack of transparency, a lot of risk of money laundering are reasons that are keeping respected international corporations from investing in Sudan.
That was Suleiman Baldo, the Enough Project senior advisor, speaking to Ayendeng Bior from Addis Ababa via WhatsApp. Scientists say we must drastically cut meat consumption to fight climate change and sustainable feed a human population to set reach 10 billion by 2050. Getting from rhetoric to reality is not easy. But from Paris, Leisha Bryan reports on a growing effort to afoot to champion green cuisine that is getting chefs, scientists, and analysts on board.
Spelt risotto was on the menu at a recent lunch in Paris, featuring ingredients not usually found on our dinner tables. Spelt is an ancient form of wheat with a nutty flavor. It's also rich in fiber and minerals and counts among dozens of sometimes ancient and obscure foods we need to start eating, scientists say, for ourselves and for our planet.
75% of our foods come from 12 crops and 5 animals. 75% of everything we eat. 60% of all of our calories come from just 3 vegetable crops.
David Edwards is Director of Food Strategy at Environmental Group, WWF, which jointly produced a report, Future 50 Foods, with German food giant Knorr. The message, our current eating habits, relying on large-scale farming and livestock production, have got to change.
We have a 60% decline in wildlife populations since 1970, the last 50 years, within a lifetime. We've just heard, I mean, you may have seen the news, a precipitous decline in insect populations also. The food system has pushed wildlife to the extreme margins.
The Paris lunch featured many of the report's so-called future foods. Vegetables are in, meat is out. On the menu, walnuts, root vegetables, lentil flour, yams, and soy milk. Also, fonio, a drought-resistant grain that Senegalese chef Pierre Thiam now markets in the United States and serves at his New York City restaurant, sourcing it from smallholder farmers in Africa.
We're still importing food like rice, for instance, in Senegal. And yet we could have our own fonio, our own millet, but we still have that mentality of what comes from the West is best.
So today, we're all,
really blessed.
Former White House chef Sam Kass, who led Michelle Obama's campaign against childhood obesity, is now fighting for the environment.
When we talk about these dramatic changes that we need to overhaul everything, people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't know what to do. So we have to really get it down to, like, what is it you can do? And here it's like, just pick two or three foods and eat them once a week. That would be a big start.
Here in Europe, research fellow Laura Wellesley of British think tank Chatham House says governments need to better respond to a dietary shift to so-called plant-based meat and, more controversially, meat grown in laboratories.
The EU has really invested quite heavily in this area, but it could do more. It could invest more public finance in the research and development of cultured meat and plant-based meat options that are truly sustainable and are healthy options. And it could also support the commercialization of innovations.
At the Paris lunch, diner Thomas Blom gave his first course a thumbs up.
Some sort of a soup with a lot of spices and some new ingredients. So it was really interesting to see. Tasted really well with lentils.
Diners feeling a bit sleepy after the seven-course tasting menu could always try the Green Moringa After Party Booster Juice before heading back to work. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Villagers trapped by conflict in a remote part of Yei River State's Mukaiya County say they've had no access to health care for the past 3 years. Since 2016, the area has been a battleground for SPLA-IO, the National Salvation Front rebels, and government forces. Faustino Lugalo, a resident of Kili Village, says since fighting flared again in 2016, the area has become a no-go zone for aid workers. And finally, South Sudanese Catholic bishops meeting in Juba say the revitalized peace deal does not address the root causes of the conflict and should be renegotiated. The bishops released a pastoral message today after a three-day meeting. They say the agreement simply extends the power-sharing model, which encourages the parties to haggle over positions and percentages. Information Minister Michael McQuay responded, calling the Catholic Church a sect and arguing that the agreement addresses all the concerns of the people of South Sudan. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday, and we now leave you with a gospel song, Mungu Aweza Yote, by Solomon Mukubwa. We have been listening to Solomon Mukubwa with his song Mungu Aweza Yote. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ni mapasta makanisa ni kuwa na mazabauni ya wache. Tutaishia wapi leo na makanisa ya leo ye. Tutaishia wapi leo na wakristo wa leo mama. vita vitole vya uongo vimeanza tuzibadilishe tabia zetu.